This works now?
It works?
Yes? Okay. So, again, thank you very much. So, today I want to speak about random embedding of LPn into LR of dimension capital N, with capital N bigger than little n. And just let me start by recalling some old facts from the Lucas theory of Banach spaces. So, we all know the notion of Banach measure distance between Banach spaces, which are isomorphic, okay? And we will study embedding of finite dimensional space, E, into a Banach space. We will denote it with a standard notation, E embeds into X with constant K, which means that there exists an operator T from E into X, on which when you compute the norm of T and the norm of T minus 1, it is smaller than K, so of course here, norm of T minus 1 means that you restrict to the range of T, your operator at the arrival space. And a well-known result from the very beginning of the theory is a famous result of Dvoretsky, who tells that when you take an infinite dimensional Banach space X, then for any dimension n, for any epsilon, you can embed the Hilbertian space of finite dimension little n, you can embed it into X with distortion 1 plus epsilon only. So it is almost isometry here. And this result in the paper of Dvoretsky, in fact, it was quantified already. It was something with, if in fact you work in a space X of finite dimension and you find a certain correspondence between the dimension little n and the dimension of X, but this was done in a very nice way by Milman at the beginning of the 70s, who tells that if you take a norm, so a convex body such that and the scalar product on R capital N, such that the unit ball with the scalar product is contained in the unit ball of your norm space E, if you introduce this parameter capital M, which is the average over the sphere of the norm of theta, then you will be able to embed almost isometrically L2 of dimension little n into E when the dimension little n satisfies this relation. So here there is capital N, and here there is this behavior with capital M square, and it is known that you can find some position on which you know how to evaluate this capital N, and which gives, for example, that if N is of the order of log of capital N, then you can always do it. Okay? So, if you take this formulation, and also if you apply it in the particular case of L1 space, then you see that in that case, the average number, this capital M, here is of the order of constant, in fact, which is slightly surprising, but which means that you can embed the Hilbertian space of dimension little n into, almost isometrically, into L1 of dimension proportional to n, big proportion but proportional to n. So of course, here if you look at this result, you say, okay, if you are not interested in almost isometric embedding but in isomorphic embedding only, then you take epsilon equal a constant and you look what happens here, the constant C of epsilon will be very big with respect to epsilon. In fact, you will always have a very big constant, which means that this operator here, in fact, if you look at the matrix, it is a very tall matrix, very rectangular. And the question of the almost isomorphism was solved by Cashin in 77, who proved that, in fact, if you want to embed L2n into L1 of dimension very close to n now, n times 1 plus eta, then you can do it almost, but now isomorphically, with a constant which is not close to 1. You have to pay a price here about the constant, but you can do it. Almost all the proofs of this result are now understood via the use of random method, and that you can describe through the use of Gaussian operator, except the result of Cashin. And the result of Cashin was generalized also to the case of convex body with bounded volume ratio here by Sharek and Tomczak Jagerman. So what can we say about other embeddings? This was all what we know about embedding of Hilbertian space into a Banach space. And what can we say about other embeddings? So for example, LP space into X, this will be my main subject of today. So to do it, you have to change the Gaussian random variable by other variables, which are the p-stable random variable. And so theta is p-stable if its characteristic Fourier transform is exponential minus t to the p here, and you have a parameter sigma in front, and it is standard, like in the Gaussian case, when sigma is equal to 1, okay? And what are the main properties of this p-stable random variable? The following: when you take independent copies of standard p-stable random variable, when you take a linear combination of this p-stable random variable, you get it is equal in distribution. This sign here means equal in distribution to the LP norm of alpha times a p-stable random variable. Okay, so this is one of the important things. Like for the Gaussian, you have here the Euclidean norm of alpha times the Gaussian. It is exactly the same behavior. But the main difference now is the second property, is that when you are p-stable, for p strictly less than 2, then p-stable random variables have r moments for r strictly less than p, but they do not have higher moments. They do not belong to LR for r bigger or equal to p. Okay, so this is one of the main differences with the Gaussian, of course. And so if you look at what means this identity here, this means exactly that the finite dimensional space LPN, if you look at this operator, the operator which alpha associates this, then here you receive a random variable which belongs to L1, of course, because 1 is strictly less than SMT, so it belongs to L1, no problem, and it is in fact isometric to L1, because here, this operator here, you will receive the LP norm of alpha, so here you will have in fact exactly an isometry. So this means that this space is isometric to a subspace of capital L1. Now in the 70s, there was a lot of notions that were developed about type of Gaussian, type of a Banach space with Gaussian variable, with Rademacher variable. And there is another notion, which is the notion of stable type P for a Banach space. And a Banach space is said of stable type P if and only if for some value of R, in fact it will be true after for every, but if it is true for 1, if you can find a constant such that whatever number of points x1, xn you take in your Banach space x, you can prove, you have such an inequality that the average of the norm of the linear combination of your vector xi with p-stable random variable, this average to the power R, is controlled by the sum of the by the LP norm of the norm of the XI. So this is, you say that it is of stable type P, and of course you say that the stable type constant of X is the smallest constant C here that you can put here. And Morin and Pillier proved in 76 that in fact it was well known that you cannot embed LPN into any Banach space almost isometrically, but they really characterize this possibility here. If you have Banach space of infinite dimension, then LPN almost isometrically embed into your Banach space X for any n and any epsilon, if and only if it is not of stable type P. So the previous thing that I said about capital L1, for example, means that capital L1, of course, is not of stable type P. Capital L1 is just of type 1, not anything more. So, and then you can do it. So this theorem is, in a sense, the counterpart of the Dvoretsky theorem in the infinite dimensional setting about embedding of LPN into X. Okay, but now you have a condition on the Banach space X. And as I said, we have we know the result of Neeleman, who tells that you can almost isometrically embed this Hilbertian space into L1 of dimension proportional to n here. And there was this natural question: what can we say about LP? About LP, so there is a main result of Johnson and Chapman in 82, who proved exactly this existence of this almost isometric embedding for LPN into L1 of dimension, again, proportional to N. And the result is more general, in fact. It works also for LR, for an arbitrary R between 0 and 1. And as I described at the beginning, there is this quantitative version of Millman for any Banach space, in fact, sheer E of dimension capital N. Then you can embed L2N almost isometrically with dimension little n, which depends on of course, of epsilon of the dimension capital N and this formula where the mean of the norm, the average of the norm on the sphere appear sheer. And slightly after the paper of Johnson and Chapman, Pivier gave a different proof from which you can recover this result, and also where he quantified, in fact, exactly for a Banach space of dimension capital N, something with a dimension little n that depends now on the stable type constant P of this space here, so of this norm. And from this you can recover the result of Johnson and Chapman. So what about isomorphic results? In the isomorphic case, there was this result of Cashin, who tells that you can embed L2N into L1 of dimension very close to N now, but now you have to pay a price that it is an isomorphism and not an almost isometry. And during a long time, nothing happens here in this question about can we embed LPN into L1 of dimension very close to N with an isomorphism here. And this is what we have solved with Omer Friedland. So let me state the results that were known before. So there was a paper of Naor and Zavic who proved that you can do it, you can embed LPN into L1 of dimension very close to little n, but with a distortion that was depending on log power of logarithm of n and of eta. So in their paper, they gave an explicit definition of a random operator by approximating p-stable random variable and things like that. There was a paper of Johnson and Chapman who solved completely the question, but they just proved that this operator exists. There is the proof is based, in fact, on a result of Bourguin, Calton, and Safriri, and on a result of Elton, which works for, in fact, only in L1, and which really shows the existence of an operator, but you do not have any idea of how to define this operator, how it works, and this was really only one operator, not a family of random operator who satisfies the conclusion that we wanted. And so the result that we proved is exactly this. So you have some condition of between R and P to embed LPN into LR, but think, for example, just to read the result to R equal 1, so take P strictly bigger than 1 and smaller than 2, and you have a definition, an explicit definition of random operators, such that for any alpha, you control the LR norm of S of alpha by the LP norm, so you have a control of the norm of the operator. You have also a lower bound with the LP norm, which means that you control the norm of the inverse when you restrict on the range of the image of S. And this holds true with very high probability, with exponentially high probability in the dimension here, e to the minus n. So perhaps just I want to emphasize about a small thing, that is the definition of our random operator here, our random operator. It is going from LPN, in fact it goes into RN, and the definition, as we will see, does not depend on R at all, in fact. So because it does not depend on R at all, we will have this conclusion. So for example, you take R equal 1, and you apply the conclusion here with R equal 1, you take another value of R on which you know how to do it, okay? So you have, for all this, you have the norm of S minus 1 which is bounded by a constant that depends only on eta here, like this, a constant to the power 1 over eta. So from this type of argument, of course, you have interpolation theory here and extrapolation theory, which shows you that in fact this operator S is not only a good operator from LP into L1 or LP here, but also for all the values of R for R strictly less than 1. So which means that in fact, when you look at this into LRM, you can, in this probability argument, you can say that in fact this will be valid for any R which satisfies this, that R is strictly less than P. The probability that this operator is a good operator will be still exactly like 1 minus e to the minus n. So in fact, it is really, in a sense, the same subspace that satisfies the conclusion in whatever LR space you are looking at the arrival space. So how to define such a random operator? In fact, the definition appeared already in the literature, so but I would like to rephrase a little bit about the ideas. So the first one, the naive one, is as in the Gaussian case, you take a p-stable random vector, which is a random vector with p-stable random variables here, and you take independent copies of this random vector, you put this in columns, so which means that you will have a matrix like this, okay, so these are columns, the vectors are in columns. You define an operator, so I will concentrate always in the case r equal 1, because it is really the same for different values of r. You look at this operator defined like, so by this matrix, there is a normalization factor, I forgot, 1 over n always. Okay, with this matrix, and the operator t tilde will have independent entries. Very good. What are the main properties of this operator? Because of p-stable random variable, when you take linear combination, you take the LP norm of alpha. So when you compute the average of the L1 norm of t tilde of alpha, you will have the LP norm of alpha. Very good. Exactly as in the Gaussian setting, in the Gaussian case, you have the L2 norm here. Okay. And now you are asking to make the same proof as in the Gaussian case. Do you have concentration of this L1 norm of T tilde of alpha around its mean? Do you have something like this? And the problem is, the answer is, of course, no, you do not have concentration. Why? You cannot expect exponential concentration like in the Gaussian case. Why? Because you are working now with p-stable random variable. And p-stable random variable, I said that they do not have high moments. They do not have moments bigger than R, and bigger than P, sorry. So in fact, you cannot expect exponential concentration. Exponential concentration is at least you need all moments of order p and to have a control of this. So here, you cannot follow the usual road of the proof. So the second idea is the following. You take a random vector, y. For our situation, it is defined like this, but basically it is a random vector, okay, y. You take lambda j are independent exponential random variable, gamma j is the sum of this j exponential random variable, and you define t tilde to be this series of the gamma j to the power minus 1 over p times yj, and there is a theorem of Lepage, Woodruff, and Zinn, but when I started to discuss about this with probabilists, they said, okay, it was well known, in fact, in a sense. They did more in this paper. This was in the middle, in fact, of something, too, that they needed this. That this new vector, t tilde, is, in fact, a p-stable random vector, and because I chose at the beginning y to be the random vector plus minus ei with probability 1 over 2n, you can see that it has the same distribution than a proportional factor, but what is this vector here? This vector is just a classical p-stable random vector, sum of theta l, el, so the vector of coordinates theta 1, theta n, this p-stable. Now with the same strategy, you take independent copies, you put them in columns, and you define an operator. So if you rewrite what it means, you will get such an operator because you have taken dependent copies of this t tilde I. So you replace this by yij. You take more vectors here, more independent vectors. And what are the properties because of this theorem of Woodruff, Lepage, and Zille? I have put the normalization factor here in front such that the average of the L1 norm is exactly equal to the LP norm of alpha now, exactly equal, no problem. But of course, you didn't win anything about the concentration around the mean because you didn't change the problem. You still work with p-stable random variable. So you have nothing. But in fact, this series now is very good to approximate p-stable random variable. And how you do it? This was, the construction that I present, that I'm presenting here comes from the paper of Pizier of 83. Now you replace the random variable gamma j to the power of minus 1 over p just by j to the minus 1 over p in your series, okay? And, okay, you do this, and some miracle happens. So what are the key properties? You do not change too much the average of the L1 norm of t of alpha, now comparing to the average of the t tilde of alpha, which was really equal to the LP norm, and now you have concentration of the L1 norm around its mean. The answer is yes. And why? Because when you start to look at a property of concentration of the L1 norm around its mean bigger than t, you use classical theory of Martingale inequality, and then this theory of Martingale inequality gives you exactly an exponential concentration with exponential minus nt to the q. Of course, I didn't say that q is the conjugate of p, okay, here, but okay, it's written here. And these two ingredients, in fact, are the main ingredients. So this one comes from the paper of Johnson and Chapman about the use exactly of you start to approximate. So they did a different approximation of p-stable random variable, but with the same key ingredient here using Martingale inequality. And this first property is clearly quantified in the paper of Pizier about the fact that the average of the L1 norm, if you look at how it differs from the LP norm of alpha, it is really quantified just with this quotient little n divided by capital N to the 1 over q. Okay, so now that it is done, in fact, this is the definition of our operator that I called S here. So S is just the operator, you erase the normalization factor. As you see here, this doesn't depend on R at all. You just have this operator, and this operator will be the good one, will be the operator that will satisfy the conclusion that I have stated in the theorem. So just one remark about this matrix now. This matrix T tilde, because I have changed the J, which was gamma J to the minus 1 over P, with gamma j to the minus 1 over p, I have p-stable random vector, so they have independent entries of this vector. But here, in this situation, after replacing this gamma j by little j to the minus 1 over p, I lose independence of the entries. I just have independence of the columns of the matrix, but I don't have independence of all the entries. So I don't have independence of rows in my matrix. So in this type of things, I could say that I am more in the setting of the talk of Hradec yesterday about random matrix with independent columns or independent rows than in the classical theory of random matrices where they work with independent entries very often. So now let us develop the classical net argument. So you fix alpha in the sphere and you take the concentration property that you have that tells you that T of alpha, the L1 norm of T of alpha, is very close to its average. And I say that its average, it is the LP norm of alpha. So when you are in the sphere, the LP norm is 1. Very good, bigger than T. And I write the conclusion that we have from the concentration inequality. So what does it mean? This means that with very high probability, or with very small probability, this event occurs, so the contrary appears with very high probability. With very high probability, you have this inequality on both sides. You control by 1 plus t and by 1 minus t. You take t very small, epsilon, because you want at the beginning they wanted an almost isometric result, so you take t equal epsilon, how can you make this exponential very small here? The only choice that you have, because t now is chosen to be epsilon between 0 and 1, the only choice that you have to make this exponential very small to beat the cardinality of the net is to take capital N very big. Very big with respect to a constant depending on epsilon times n. You have no choice here, then this constant has to be big to be able to make this exponential very, very small here. Okay? So this is to conclude for a result for an almost isometric result. But from this concentration inequality, you have another information. You have also an information about the norm. Now, if you fix capital N to be, for example, equal to little n, okay? Very close to little n. You do not play about this, okay? But now you take t big. So if you take t big, here you will be able to beat the cardinality of the net. So this concentration inequality gives you almost isometric results, but it gives also an upper bound about the norm of t without any work. This was done, in fact, previously. So our main theorem, in fact, is a theorem about the lower bound. It's a theorem about what can we say when capital N is very close to little n. Can we prove such probabilistic estimate, the fact that there exists an alpha in the unit sphere of LP, such that the one norm is small, that this event has a very small probability. So several remarks. Now here, perhaps you are all lost a little bit about what I am doing, but just about this case LP into L1 and so on, if you look to the simple case L2, L2, okay, if you look to the simple case L2, L2, so you look at the, if it exists a vector in the unit sphere of L2, such that the L2 norm of T of alpha is small. This is exactly the definition of the singular value of T, okay? So if we were looking to the case L2, L2, we just were looking to the smallest singular value of the operator T. And about smallest singular value of the operator, there has been a lot of work during the last, so, 7 years, yes, something like that, 7, 8 years, about the study of the smallest singular value of random matrices with independent entries. At least this is the result that I quote here. So there was first two papers, one from Schertmann, who considered only plus minus one entries, and another one of Lidvac, Pajor, Rudelson, and Tomczak, Jägermann, where they present, in fact, a very general strategy, the one that I use, in fact, here, to study the smallest singular value of matrices with independent entries, only having very weak hypothesis about finite moment of the entries, but having other hypotheses about the norm of the operator that has to satisfy some very big concentration inequality. And this was pushed forward recently by Rudelson and Rudelson-Verschinin to study smallest singular value of matrices with sub-Gaussian entries. So one of the main idea in all these papers, and in fact that I have read also in the line of a paper of Cashin in 77, in fact, in the one, it is the decomposition of the sphere into two subsets on which you prove different small ball estimates. So what is what are these sets of the unit sphere? So I draw the unit sphere of SP or of S2 here, and you define the set of sparse vector. So the set of So the set of sparse vector it is the set of vectors in Rn or in SPn-1, which have a cardinality of the support of x, which is smaller than delta times n, a certain proportion of your starting space. So this is, in S3 I don't have a lot of choice, so I just throw this. Okay, and I have this one here. So this is my set in the sense of sparse vector. And on the set of sparse vector, what is the situation? The situation for my operator T is, so now my support is smaller than delta n. Okay, I have an almost isometric result when the number of, how is it written? Okay. When the number of rows here are very big, capital C times n. Okay. So my matrix, I have an almost isometric result when I have a very tall matrix. Yes? And now I know, in fact, that I want to consider the case where capital N is very close to little n, so not a very tall matrix. But I work with sparse vector. And since I work with sparse vector, it means that I am reducing the dimension of the original space. I am working in the original space in dimension delta n, in fact. So if I choose correctly my delta comparing to the C that I have for the almost isometric result, I will be able to use this concentration around the mean to deduce small ball estimate with very high probability for the set of sparse vector. Okay? So this is one of the ideas that for this case of sparse vector, when I have this almost isometric result, I know how to do anything. And now I defined the case of almost sparse vector, which is just that I increase a little bit my set here. Okay, and here also. Okay, so I should not have drawn this. Okay, and also behind, I don't care what happens behind. Okay, and now what remains? It remains the case of non-almost sparse vector. These vectors which are here. Okay, but what is the main one very nice property of this vector, one basic property of this vector, is that in fact they have a lot of coordinates who are proportional to 1 over little n to the 1 over p. So remember that my vector belongs to the unit sphere of LP. So the classical example of such non-almost sparse vector is the example of 1 over n to the 1 over p to each coordinate. Okay, this is really the basic example of a non-sparse vector. And if you take this, you see that you have a set of cardinality proportional to n on which you will have exactly the same behavior of the coordinates. Let me look just at this example. So you take alpha equal this vector, and you look at the image of T of alpha. I should have written the definition of T on the blackboard, but okay. So this is the definition of T of alpha with this alpha I. Now I remind you that 1 over Q is the conjugate of P. And now I have 1 over N to the 1 over P. Little n and capital N are very close to each other. So approximately it is something, a constant times 1 over N times this series here, sum over I, but the series sum over J of J to the minus 1 over P YIJ. And at least one of the first things that you want to understand is to understand a small ball estimate for one vector. For one vector like this, can you say something about the small ball estimate? But now for the probability, a small ball with the L1 norm. So in all the previous works, in a lot in fact of the previous work, they were using some kind of SN inequality or multidimensional SN inequality, and where we were looking to the literature, we didn't find anything adapted to the fact to study the probability that the L1 norm of something is smaller than T. Each time it was considering the L2 norm or something like that, never the L1 norm, and when you try to use just a simple Cauchy-Schwarz inequality, you lose everything in your estimate. So we develop a tool which is another kind of multidimensional SN inequality, okay, which tells you, in fact, which is not very difficult, which tells you that when you take a random vector, you assume that the characteristic Fourier transform belongs to L1. Then, when you take any compact star-shaped body in Rn, you will be able to deduce a small ball estimate. So in fact, I should have put the 1 over volume of K here to show that the estimate here it doesn't depend on K at all. Here, I just need the fact that I'm able to control the volume of K and to deduce something here. So the main thing is, am I able to prove that my Fourier characteristic transform belongs to L1? In the discrete case, usually you do not have such property. Okay? But because of the particular value here, the particular definition, we will be able to do something. So first of all, as I said, it generalizes classical SN inequality to multidimensional case and to any norms, not only the Euclidean norm. And the proof is really a direct application of Fourier analysis, in fact. Not very complicated. So let me come back to my problem. You have my T of alpha, my image by T of the operator alpha was 1 over n times this, so I multiply by n here. I define my random vector x to be this sum, and I choose in this theorem the body k to be capital N times B1n. Capital N times B1n, it is known that it has volume approximately constant to power capital N. My norm in K, now the norm in X is exactly, because of this factor N here and N here, it is exactly the L1 norm of T of alpha, which means that if you apply the theorem that we have about the small ball estimate, you can show that the probability that the L1 norm of T of alpha, smaller than T, will be controlled exactly by a constant to the power n, which was the volume of K, times this, and again the L1 norm of the Fourier characteristic transform. And now, we have to study this. Okay, remember that X is this infinite series here, and this is because here we have an infinite series with j to the minus 1 over p, that in fact you can make the computation. It is slightly not boring, but it is you have to work a little bit to be able to show that it has an L1 norm which is bounded by another constant to the power n, capital N. And here, now that you have done this, again, a classical net argument allows you to conclude that in fact this, you will get exactly the exponential probability, small probability that you want by killing the cardinality of the net and choosing correctly the value of capital N with respect to N, and in fact, this is just technical at the end. Okay, thank you very much.